Welcome to Busted Pencils, homeroom edition. Educated educators talking education. Fully leaded education talk. It's the end of the month, Jacob. The end of the month, at the beginning of the week. That's always a fun way to start things off. So we got homeroom today. Just me and you, Jacob. Less echo. We tried this a little bit earlier and there was boisterous echoes. Tim's been moving. I'm making a little home renovation move. It's summertime. That's teacher off season. So listeners out there, you teachers, I know you're doing all kinds of home projects, all kinds of things that were neglected through the school year. And now you might have a little bit more time to get to those things as you get your R&R, which is always full of all kinds of activities, you know, home improvements, cleaning, organizing, doing all the stuff to make sure you're ready to go in August. Maybe it's September if you're lucky. But we're here, Jacob. Last day of June. Tomorrow it's July. And it's homeroom. And you sent me this weekend a pretty interesting article. I think it's a great way to kick off the week. You want to give our listeners a little preview of this awesome news article that you found? I think really sparks a good conversation about what's happening in our schools, both secondary and post-secondary education.
Absolutely, Johnny. So what I found here, it's from K-12 Dive, written by Carolyn Christ, I believe, is how you pronounce that. Majority of high schoolers say they don't feel prepared for post-graduation. Took a couple notes here. Fewer than 30% of high school students feel, quote, very prepared for what they're going to do after graduation. Even among students interested in a specific pathway, only 46% said they feel very prepared for that pathway. And both parents and students said that they didn't know as much about other pathways, such as certification programs, internships, apprenticeships, military options, or entrepreneurship. At least half of parents said they know only a little or nothing at all about pathways other than college degrees and paid jobs. Johnny, what are you thinking about this? Because it sounds to me like this kind of ties into a lot of what we've been talking about lately.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, immediately, Jacob, I thought of the conversation we had last week, right? We were talking about that on the show. You know, we were, you know, discussing, Tim had brought up, you know, were parents disappointed to find out that their students leaving high school were not interested in attending a four-year university. And he had pulled up an article that expressed, you know, that there was sort of a letdown to parents. And Jacob, you shared a story about like parental generations. So if you're of the age of, you know, young people, you know, 16 to 18, 19, 20 right now, the end of high school, beginning, you know, career life, which can include college. You had mentioned, Jacob, that previously it seemed sort of like generations before just sort of expected that college was a pathway to, you know, a successful, a quote unquote, successful life, which by and large for previous generations is incredibly true, right? The percentage and likelihood of you being middle class or middle to upper class or even jumping a socioeconomic class level required a college degree. But things have changed slightly, and that's not me being sort of against going to college, but I thought this article was really interesting. It aligned to Jacob what we were talking about last week too, with like, hey, there are more pathways, and we all, and I'll include myself in that as a parent, even though I am a professor in higher education and a high school teacher, by and large we don't know all those pathways. We're sort of in the routines and patterns of the past. You want to be successful, you go to college. And of course, we always knew too, especially I call myself, you know, a blue collar scholar. I came, you know, from the trades back to college. But, you know, there was always this sentiment that if you weren't getting a college degree, you were in some sort of way failing or you were just not smart enough. And I say it all the time. I know this to be not true in terms of the reality. I know a lot of really smart men and women who work in the trades. By and large, like there's a lot of knowledge and a lot of learning and a lot of being incredibly smart that goes into being a successful, you know, electrician, a successful plumber, you know, even we get sometimes a bad rep, framers or roofers, right? Like, cause we're hammer swingers. It's sort of been characterized as dumb guy work, which is far from the truth, but is one of those painful successes of American education, sorting people based on, hey, you did good in school, or you were particularly good at taking tests or doing a certain kind of learning, and so you're smart, and the rest of you people who are more hands-on and, you know, a different kind of learner, well, you're just not smart and unsuccessful. In fact, here, college for you successful students, and, you know, trades and other things for you less successful or unsuccessful students. And we've embodied that sorting system in a lot of ways. But there are those patterns, Jacob, of the past, like you mentioned about, like, your parents saying, like, hey, we really want you to go to college. It's important, like, because for them, the experience was finish high school, you go into college, you have more opportunities in your career, you have more financial stability, you have more access to jobs with, say, like, healthcare and 401ks and retirement plans and all these things that sort of the boomers experienced putting into place. You know, and then Gen Xers kind of grew into and worked sort of, although I'll put a caveat on sort of, because they're straddled with a tremendous amount of debt to follow in those footsteps. But that millennials and Gen Zers and Gen Y, and now I'm certain it's going to be completely changed for Gen Alpha and all these different generations that are coming, I would say the landscape has changed quite a bit. And even my own, I'm a professor in higher education. I taught high school. I would even say, admittedly, my knowledge of these diverse pathways is fairly limited. So I have to imagine, and this isn't me talking down to a listener who's not in higher education or in public education. It's me sympathizing. I agree with this article, Jacob. I think a majority of us, and I'm in that us, do not know very much about those different pathways. We are entrenched in sort of those patterns of you go to high school and you go to college. And if not, hey, will you find a trade? And we kind of know that that's an option, but we're unfamiliar with the variety of different options, like this article, and you mentioned certificates, apprenticeships, internships, you know? So I think there's a lot of learning that we can do. If you're a high school educator or counselor, this is like probably top priority. How are you learning the different pathways for students to help them connect with those, but also help families learn? And if you're a parent or a student, you're asking questions like, hey, I hear there's a lot of options for me. What are those options? So this is an important conversation that I think, as we talk about the changing landscape of education, that we have to be, you know, cued into. What are those pathways? I think we'll probably ask Tim more about it this week, because he's part of some of those conversations on his day-to-day. But Jacob, the other thing about this article that really stood out to me, and I was pondering for a bit, was not only the not knowing about those diverse pathways, yeah, but the idea that students felt unprepared for the next step. And that really stood out to me. I mean, I you sent me that text. I read the article this weekend, and you know, I woke up this morning, had a cup of coffee, and I was thinking about it, and I was like, man, that is one of the immediate true realities.
Oh yeah.
Of us not, like I say us, again, me, the educator and educational leader and people, like we're the grown folks. Like we knew that there was sort of a pattern. There's sort of a habit almost in culture of like, well, here's your choice. You know, in high school, you knew, like, you got the military, you got the armed services, you got college, and you got different types of colleges to go to, 2-year degrees, 4-year degrees. You have apprenticeship and trade.
Yeah.
You have these three things, but they were pretty like well-trodden paths, right?
Absolutely.
That we knew about. And I think it gave us a little bit of, I remember being, you know, 17, I graduated at 17, but I remember being feeling incredibly unprepared for the next step. So at first I thought, well, that's just what it's like to be 17 years old, 17, 18. And I still stand by that. I think we burn through school way too quick.
Yeah.
I think, you know, like I'm a big fan of gap years. I'm a big fan of, hey, let's not race through this. Although reality is I have a lot of students who've done half of their college work as high school students, early college admittance programs, dual enrollments, all kinds of programs that speed things up, which I get economically. But then I think about, like, they're in the workforce at 20, 21, maybe late. Mm-hmm. Some of them are 18, 19, finished with a degree. So I think we race into things too much. But Jacob, I really thought about that. I thought about that aspect of feeling unprepared for the next step. And my first reaction was like, well, that's just what happens at that age. But I was really thinking about it, reading the article and given our conversations and my own confusion about what pathways are. And I think it's even more accelerated. I think it's probably more intense, that uncertainty of what the options are, what comes next.
Absolutely.
What do you think about that? You feel like that's probably true?
Yeah, I think that it is worse now than it used to be. And I think the reason for it, I want to cue in on something you said, is that when you were at that age, thinking about what you're going to do after high school, that the idea was you try to get into college, and if you can't get into college, then you have to get into a trade. And I think that for people now who are 16, 17 years old, I'm not sure that they even think about the idea that trades are more than just a job. I'm not sure if they even think about that that's an option for growth and for finding a way to live. I think the bias towards college education on behalf of a generation that preceded young people right now has taken things over so much that young people nowadays don't even conceptualize trades as being a noble line of work and a livable way to go through your life, which they are, and they can be, and they should be. And I think that contributes to that anxiety that young people have and that confusion that young people have. Because when I think about it, I hear a lot of people my age or younger say, oh, I wish they would have taught us this in school or that in school. And it's usually about practical things. Like, I wish they would have taught us how to fill out a checkbook or things like that. Maybe that's becoming less relevant now than it used to be.
I was going
to
say, yeah. But I get you, like, balance a checkbook, understand those kind of day-to-day tasks.
Adulting, as they call it. And when I think back to when I was in high school, class of 2017, they did teach us that stuff. There were classes like that. But I don't think it really sank in. And what I would say to people who might bring that up is I would say, look, you do have classes like that, but if it's not getting through to young people, if young people aren't educated on their options, then you're not doing it right. And it's not an indictment of you per se, but if what you're doing is not having the outcomes you want, I think you got to take a second look at that and make sure that people are actually figuring these things out. I mean, Johnny, what do you think can be done so that high school students know their options and feel more comfortable taking alternative options?
Well, yeah, Jacob, you know, something came to mind at the same as you were talking about this, and it's been bouncing around in my head for a while, and I've had a couple conversations with some educator friends around it, but mostly just chewing the fat on, you know, kids these days. And, you know, we're not the my friends and I, we're not the type who are like, man, kids these days are a problem. We're more like, man, we're inspired by kids these days. But we've noticed some differences, especially in labor. And you talked about that, like understanding a trade is more than just a job. You know, it's a learning pathway. It's a career.
Well, you didn't go do college, so now pick one of these things over here.
If I could say, Johnny, I think a lot of young people, when they think about if I have a trade rather than a degree, they think that that's all just unskilled labor, I think, is how they feel about it. Whereas when you go through a trade or an apprenticeship or something, you have just as much of a skill that you learned and that your expertise is in as somebody who got a degree.
Yeah. Well, you know what, Jacob? You're right, because also just some basic psychology that goes into this, some learning theory, right? You invest in seeing your own development happen, right? So it's like you enjoy it. You're finding that, like, you've learned some structure around it. You know, you get up in the morning, you go and learn, and you start as, you know, a novice, an apprentice, and you get better, and you see yourself grow, hopefully in something that you enjoy, and then you continue to do that. It's the difference between, you know, a career and a job. And I like that you said that we're doing we're failing young people when we're not presenting them with the opportunities to find those career pathways. The other thing, Jacob, I think, and it's me sort of also a little bit downtrodden about the economy, but I feel like we really kind of, what's the word? I'm trying to clean up my language for the podcast. You know, we kind of screw over young people.
Sure.
And that was in the article, kind of coded, read between the lines, and you've brought it up, is so many young people, and this is like field tested. It's not researched by me, although the article gave some really good numbers that reflect my experience. But in field test, I have in the past few years I've never had so many students who have never had a job. And they're young. They're just coming out of like high school age, 17, 18, 19. I'm 17 because some of these dual enrollments and college credit classes start even earlier than ever. But I can blame COVID some and different in the economy. It's like jobs are really important because you don't only learn in school. And jobs aren't only about making money, but, you know, to be fair, at a certain age, you know, say 15, 16, you can apply for your worker's permit and you can, you know, get a job. And there are certain laws around how many hours of the week you can work and things. But you start to learn about labor, right? And you start to, you know, have this opportunity to be in a setting of peers outside of all the people born around the same 8 days as you. And you're not in a classroom, but you're learning in a life kind of capacity. Developmentally, I think it's so important for, you know, late teens, mid to late teens, I guess if we consider like 15, 16 mid to late teens, to be able to have those experiences. I know in working, especially as a young person, I started working much earlier than I probably should have, but that was more common back in the day. And then through those formative years, it was relationships with my managers, with bosses, with peers, where I really learned about working, right? Whether it was washing dishes in a restaurant or, you know, doing landscaping or cleanup crew for a construction team, different things as a young person, I was able to have employment, right? Which provided me with also, like Jacob, you said, you know, they did teach us how to balance the checkbook in high school. But I mean, come on, like we never had enough money in our bank account to really be writing checks as kids.
Yeah.
But it was through job life where we started to learn like, whoa, if I want an $80 pair of sneakers, well, I probably can't go out with my friends to eat this weekend or next weekend. So you're beginning to learn to make wise choices around wants and needs and how much money you make and that, hey, maybe I shouldn't stay up till 3 a.m. because I'm supposed to be, you know, at my greenhouse job at 6:20. So there's different life skills that I feel like we talk a lot about essential curriculars here on Busted Pencils. And we've talked about football and sports and clubs and they're important parts of the curriculum. But Jacob, I think being able to have an internship or a job as a young person, especially a summer job, where now you're like shifting gears and like, hey, you're working, you're with people who aren't only your age, who are helping bring you into the community. And they're like, look, young blood, I know you're still young and having fun and, you know, you got to focus on school and that's all part of it. But, you know, this is how work life is. This is what it means to be on time. This is what it means to value working on a team, to having lunch breaks and the like. I mean, I think there's a lot of learning that when I read the article about people feeling unprepared for the next step, I started to think about, well, a lot of us, and talking to some of my friends and peers who are educators, I started asking like, hey, when you were 15, 16, or at least 17, 18, where were you working? Were you working in the summer? Oh yeah, almost everybody my age, Jacob, had a summer job.
Yeah.
And this is a rare thing these days. It's hard to get a job as a kid.
I think you're right, Johnny. And if you look at it on a number of fronts, young people, high schoolers now, are less likely to have driven a car by the time they're done with high school. They're less likely to have had a romantic relationship. They're less likely to have had a job. And if you think about that, when you have not had that taste of what comes later, it's probably a lot more scary and uncertain to be heading out into the real thing dry.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I want to just put a caveat out there. Like, Jacob and I aren't here like advocating for child labor. You know, it's just there's a scaffolding. I think sometimes we've gotten too overprotective or too and in some ways it's the economy. Like it's hard to find a job, and through different recessions and different closures of factories and layoffs and different things, we've really been part of a changing landscape of the labor in our communities. But by and large, as we're really building strong economies, strong local, you know, economies, it's so important that young people are part of that because it's part of their learning. And Jacob, you hit the nail on the head, and I've been reading about this, and by no means an expert on this, but I'm interested in what a lot of experts now are calling the anxious generation. You know, they're talking about this idea, like you had said, it is not uncommon, nor really, we might even say, and I always am apprehensive of these labels, but it's not abnormal, and I hate normal and abnormal because, you know, what isn't weird or shouldn't be, but it's not uncommon for a young person, like you said, to not have had a romantic relationship, you know, coming out of high school, to not have, you know, had a job, to not have obtained their driver's license or driven a car. And so that's not pointing the finger at these youth, like, well, they didn't take an opportunity to learn these things, or me pointing my finger at parents and say, what kind of parent would let their kid? It's sort of crept up on us, and I think COVID exacerbated it. And I think, you know, how we viewed young people primarily as a problem or as competitors, instead of important to think like, hey, they need to also work with us, right? With some regulations around that, right? There's that socialist Democrat in me saying, you know, like we need young people to learn to work and to be at work and to be part of our labor experience in our communities. But we also need them to be protected because they do also need to sleep more. We know this, you know, any pediatrician will tell you, and all the learning psychologists will say that, you know, babies and newborns and teenagers need the most sleep. And it's true. So, you know, we do need to protect them. So it's not like, hey, they shouldn't be having a 40-hour work week.
Yeah.
Right. But them being able to have a couple of days of work, some internships, even throughout the school year, especially as they're getting 17, 18 years old. Big fan, Jacob, even of us thinking about what happens if there's a gap year where you're doing an internship as like a young entrepreneur, or you're doing like a side-by-side instead of going right back into school after you graduate. It's like, hey, I'm really interested in fill in the blank, right? Whatever that profession might be. Well, you go and you do an internship. You brought up a couple of weeks ago, Jacob, international models. And again, touchy subject, because I'm not going to like, this is a gray area. Like, I don't think we should have mandatory military service. That probably would be a big panic button, bing, bing. Like the way our country has utilized military,
sure,
primarily for like the task of like maintaining national security. I'm not being critical of this, but by and large, there are other countries who require service of their young people upon graduation at 18. You owe, sometimes it's a year, sometimes it's a set number of months, but you owe service to your country. Right. And it might be militarily, or it might be logistic. Like there's a number of different ways you could be in that.
Yeah.
And I'm a big fan of that. And I know I might be creating some controversy here because of what we're familiar with. But I mean, like, hey, imagine your local economy having a group of young people that are working in the library for a year, people who are working in our markets, like our local farmers markets and our different things. It's a government job, right? It's a fixed set wage,
yeah,
right? It's not like they're going to be banking on this, or it's going to help them like take some time to learn to be in community. Jacob, I think we're going to have to explore those kinds of ideas, because
absolutely,
I just worry that we don't have it in us right now to do it through schools. And our culture has shifted away from apprenticing and bringing young people in to their life. And so that anxious generation, I can't imagine it not being anxiety ridden for them, because they're diving into the deep end and they've never even been in the pool.
That's the scary part of it. Like we've been talking about this whole episode, it's like, I don't support chucking your kid into the pool and traumatizing them. That's probably not good. But maybe, you know, when your kid is 2 to 4, hey, dad's going to hold you and we're going to go in the pool and we're going to, you know, work your way there instead of saying, hey, you happy 18th birthday. There's this thing called water. Never told you about it. But guess what? You're getting in there and good luck with it. Not a good idea. So I think people need to get acclimated. I think a lot of the rituals and coming of age things that we've had in this country are starting to become less common for young people, and that's hurting them. And Johnny, I like the idea of a national public service. And like you said, it doesn't have to be military. Basically, for people who hear that, they think of conscription, and it's scary, and people don't want to get conscripted. But the way it's done in a lot of countries is basically, hey, it's time for you to do some service. You can join the military for a year if you want. That's totally accepted. Or you can go pick up litter in Colorado for 6 months. You know, you can find a way to be of service. I think that that would be good. I think it would be good for people. The thing I'm hesitant about on that is I think it's good for you, but I also think that in a free country, you have the right to suck if you want. And if you want to not do things that are necessarily good for you, you should be able to do that. I mean, you should be encouraged to do things that are good for you. But I get a little iffy about where we start saying, this is good for you. I'm certain of it. But, and you have to. I get a little scared. But I wouldn't say necessarily I'm right there I'm sold with you on that. Way.
I'm right there with you on that. And you know what, Jacob? I love it. Because when you tell people they have to do something, it's the people who... There'll be a number of people who will figure out not to do it.
Yeah. Or they'll figure out a way to have it not work, you know, just being obstinate about it.
And maybe, Jacob, there's a ton of these options out there. And we just don't know about them. So
we're that's like my homework that assignment.
Yeah, that's the bringing it back. That's our homework assignment this week is to dig into. So maybe these pathways exist and we just need to learn more about them, explore them more, bring them into our locales. You know, and encourage them to be widely more accessible to young people who are thinking, hey, I want to be a little less anxious about what comes next. So on that note, Jacob, we got some homework for the week. We got a great lineup this week. I'm looking forward to it with you and with the Tim Bomb. So I will see you all very soon. And now it's time for your moment to zen. The cry of the poor is not always just, but if you don't listen to it, you will never know what justice is. Hey, listener, man, we appreciate you. We especially appreciate you listening to Homeroom today. And if you want to grab more Busted Pencils podcasts just like today's, well, you go on over to Apple, Spotify, wherever it is, you get your podcasts. You can always find us at civicmedia.com or on our website, bustedpencils.com. And you can always find Busted Pencils content like today's show on Mondays for Homeroom, Wednesdays for Class in Session, and on Fridays for Producer Jacob's Choice. And of course, Pencil Busters, you can always tune in and listen to the Busted Pencils weekend broadcasts on Saturdays at 3 p.m. Central Time across all the Civic Media networks for 1 hour of your favorite blue-collar scholars, Tim and Johnny, and keep busting pencils.